you're a business owner or interested in business, this is where you want your ear.
So much more interesting for the listener.
This is On Air with In Business Magazine, featuring interviews and advice with local entrepreneurial leaders on Madison 1670, The Pulse. And now your hosts, Jody and Joan.
We are On Air with In Business Magazine tonight, talking to someone who's going to motivate all of us, Lori Silverman. I'm Jody Glenn Patrick from In Business Magazine.
I'm Joan Gilman from the School of Business Executive Education Programs, and Lori Silverman is for Partners for Progress.
And she is someone who also helps people learn how she trains trainers.
She does.
For goodness sakes.
She does, but most recently, she wrote a really good book.
Which is?
Well, Lori, tell me about your book and why did you write it?
Well, the book is titled Wake Me Up When the Data is Over, How Organizations Use Stories to Drive Results. About 3 years ago, this time of year, I was doing radio and television shows around the country on another book that I had published, Stories Trainers Tell, and hosts kept asking me the same question. Can stories be used for things other than training? Can they be used in sales? Can they be used in marketing? How about branding or customer service or leadership development or strategy? And I thought, well, you know, I'm really a business strategist by background. I wonder if anybody's done anything like this. I'll go research it. So I went back through books and articles and realized that no one had written up any examples of how stories were used. Or if they had, there was only one case study per piece. So I thought, wouldn't it be fun to find 100 companies around the world who were using stories to drive business performance? And that's what really kicked off the book.
Did you find that those companies fell in a certain niche, or were they all over the board as far as a type of company?
You know, that's an interesting question. They are large Fortune 500 companies like Levi Strauss, and then there are small organizations like Herbert and Gerbert's Subs and Clubs, which is in central Wisconsin and is growing very rapidly through the use of story. They're also across a whole variety of industries, from media to hotels to high technology, which was quite surprising to us, to manufacturing organizations.
Well, we're going to find out some tips for not just trainers, but everyone on how to use your story to promote your business and to bring customers to you. Tonight, talking to Lori Silverman, our guest on air with In Business Magazine.
Grab a notebook. Jody and Joan will be right back with more On Air with In Business Magazine on Madison 1670, The Pulse. With more On Air with In Business Magazine, here's Jody and Joan on Madison 1670, The Pulse.
We are On Air with In Business Magazine tonight, talking to Lori Silverman, who wrote a couple books. One I read, I'm going to go back to that one. I read Stories That Trainers Tell. And in that book, which I read well before we started this radio series, I read a story by Joan Gilman, who contributed to that book. How did you find the people who did it, and were they all Madison grown?
For that particular book, what we did was we canvassed a couple of different groups of people, from people who are well-known trainers across the world to professional speakers who give keynote talks at large conferences to individuals who were entrepreneurs and we knew were using story as part of their day-to-day activities. And all in all, we interviewed 40 people for that book. They all gave us stories, which was absolutely fabulous, and then they also gave us other content about where do you go to find stories, how do you structure them, and what are some of the ethical considerations we need to keep in mind.
And your story was interesting, Joan. Can you sum it up for everybody in a couple, you know? I mean, just tell us the story that you told so we get a sampling of what are these stories.
You really want me to do this, Lori, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
The Chicago story, when I went to Chicago, and I was on a date, Jody. And I was wearing my mother's mink jacket. It was my aunt's coat that my mother had remade into a mink jacket. And I thought I was the cat's meow. I really thought I was all together, and I was really going to impress this guy. And we're sitting in the car. We're driving around Chicago. And I looked down, and my sleeve had fallen from the seam down and was hanging. So that there was – anyway. And – I don't know whether you've ever tried to pin mink, old mink, but I went into a ladies' room and I tried to put safety pins in. I had no other jacket. It was winter. It was cold. And there I was, the cat's pajamas, ho, 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 with her sleeve hanging down. It was one of my life's more embarrassing moments.
And how did you use that in your book, Lori?
We used stories like that for training modules. So what we did was we tried to figure out what the particular key topic was that that story covered, and then we wrote questions that people could use to debrief the story, as well as key points that they could use for discussion, and then activities that could follow up.
And that's fascinating, because we're all raised on stories. I mean, my favorite memories of my mother were her telling me bedtime stories and opening Childcraft books and all of the images in my head. So as we, you know, we've kind of moved away from that a little bit. It seems like as a culture that had to rely on oral versus written words to pass on histories, but it's got to be fascinating research that you've done.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that the brain codifies information in visual images, and the only type of communication that allows it to do that are stories. So contrary to what Microsoft would like us to believe with its PowerPoint slides, our brain does not remember information in bulleted lists.
And seven words.
Exactly. So our challenge becomes taking daily narrative. You know, if I say to you, how are you? You're going to return a story to me. Is how do we take that daily narrative, and then how do we actually use it in the workplace to craft business results from it? And that's where a lot of organizations are going today. So they're seeing the value of going back to a really timeless process.
And that's the focus of your second book.
Yes, absolutely.
So give us some examples of how companies use stories to do that.
Well, there's one of my favorite examples that I absolutely love is with Bob Rogers, who's the president of a company called DDI. It's a mid-sized human resources firm that's based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. They have about 1,000 employees across 75 offices in 26 countries around the world. And one day they found out through surveys that they had done that their employees did not know their strategic priorities. So they thought, well, how do we go about getting them to understand what those are? And someone suggested to Bob that perhaps he go out and find stories from people who are at the front line of the organization that would support those three strategic priorities. Well, the marketing department decided to help him, and they went out and they got two stories per strategic priority, and he would leave those every other Friday afternoon in a voicemail message for every employee across the company. Well, you know, the interesting thing is today, not only do those employees understand the company's three strategic priorities, but Bob would tell you that he gets over 20 to 30 stories every 2 weeks for him to make choices about which are the six best stories to use. Now, he uses the ones that promote success so that employees are reinforced in their activities. And so his greatest challenge today is not getting the stories, but how do you select those that would have the most impact? There's still another benefit, though, to that, and he would tell you that by looking across those stories, he's actually getting competitive intelligence information earlier in the process than he would have. And he can make absolutely fabulous leadership decisions as a result.
That's a great, great way of doing it, because so much of what we do, we paint visual pictures when we tell a story. And that has much more impact than the bullets or written material. Stories are really the way that people remember. I mean, they'll remember my stories. Like, I tell a story about the fact that when I went to New York to buy when I was 16 years old, I bought everything that I liked in size 14. And the message to that story was, don't buy for yourself, because our market were women 35 to 55 years old, and they didn't like what a 14-year or what a 16-year-old liked, and they didn't all wear a size 14. So you get the point across so much more effectively.
Absolutely, because, you know, our brain can remember this information, and then when we're asked to recall it, what we know through studies that have been done is that people not only recall the information, but they recall it with a higher degree of accuracy over longer periods of time. Now, you might say, why is that? And my belief is that stories touch us in ways that other forms of communication don't. They touch us physically so that when we hear a story, we have some sort of visceral reaction to it. In fact, if you hook people up to medical equipment, you'd even find that their blood pressure rates change, their heart rates change, and so on. Second, stories touch our brains. We can only talk to be understood at about 150 maybe 180 words a minute maximum, but the brain, as you know, works at 800 words a minute. So people are continually making meaning out of what they're hearing with stories, and they're taking away so much more than what we even may intend for that story to communicate. And then there's two other pieces. The third is the emotional peach, how that story touches our heart and what emotion it might evoke in us. But I think the last piece is most important. And I don't know how this works. I only know that it happens. And that is that stories touch the human spirit. And in that way, they really promote change, whether that be a change in attitude or a shift in behavior or perhaps a change in thinking.
What makes a powerful story?
What makes a powerful story is a couple of things. First of all, a story needs to follow the story arc. Very simply, it needs to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. The challenge is that the middle needs to be about conflict. I don't care if you call it a conflict, a dilemma, a problem, an issue, or a paradox. It needs to contain conflict. And one of the challenges in today's organizations is that people want to sweep those underneath the rug and minimize the impact that a story has. Second, stories have to have characters who talk. There's dialogue, not just external dialogue, but internal reflections. I always say the best way to learn this is to watch a soap opera during the day, because you'll hear characters talking about their inner thoughts constantly. And the third piece for stories to work in the workplace is they have to have some sort of moral or reason for being told. Otherwise, you get people saying, huh? Like, why did you tell that to me? What's its importance? And then from there, you can work to put those pieces together.
So it reinforces, you may have a message, then a story, then the message. So that the story reinforces the message that you want to put forward.
Absolutely. And sometimes you don't even have to have the message up front. You can just tell the story, and what the story will do will introduce the message or introduce perhaps a series of financial data or some statistics that you need to get across to people that you're able to communicate much more easily and understandably because of a story.
Well, tonight we're talking about the business of storytelling, and our guest is Lori Silverman, who is not only an author, but she's also an adjunct instructor at the Fluno Center for Executive Education at the University of Wisconsin. So we're bringing you the best of the best. And this is really reminding me of a lot of stories, too, Lori. There's one where I had a nurse friend who was really struggling with school, and she was fearful of failing. And so a group of us got together and offered her suggestions. And the one that really helped was, instead of memorizing all of these different ailments, picture Jody has this, and she's suffering from this. And so as a nurse, she would give her this to make her better. And assign us all the diseases and medicate us all. And she passed with an A because she was able to take those stories, and suddenly the data meant something to her. So we're going to look at other examples that you're going to offer up and give us keys and to how stories can be used in the business place. Talking tonight with Lori Silverman, our special guest on Air Within Business Magazine.
More on Air Within Business Magazine on Madison 1670. The Pulse is next. With more on Air Within Business Magazine, here's Jody and Joan on Madison 1670. The Pulse.
We are on Air Within Business Magazine tonight. Really fun topic for most people on using storytelling in the workplace. A gift that all of us have. All of us have gifts for storytelling. You and I certainly do, don't we, Joan Gilman?
I sure hope so.
We're talking to Lori Silverman tonight, who is an adjunct instructor at the Fluno Center for Executive Education at the University of Wisconsin. She's also an author, and you also own a company, Partners for Progress, a management consulting firm. And
busy
so
lady.
What do you do with your company? Tell us what your company does, and who are your clients, and how do you get them, and what do you do with them?
Well, you know, I tell people it depends on the time of day and the day of the week as to what it is that I actually do. I'm a business strategist by background, so in my consulting work, I spend time with organizations who are interested in searching out future strategies and then creating plans around those for the next 5 years. I also do work in scenarios, so we get to look out 25 years or longer to see what the future might hold and then back up from there to say, what should we be doing today as an organization to be profitable?
Is that harder and harder in the last 5 years when technology is outpacing some company imaginations or... or ability to predict. I mean, they used to say plan 10, have a 10-year plan. And I've been hearing lately, don't go any further than 5 because this is just a wasted mental exercise. Yeah.
Well, you know, it depends on the industry. There are some industries where they move so slowly, even with technology moving quickly, that you don't see patterns until you start to look out 10, 15, 20 years. And it's those huge mega shifts that we're looking for. The day-to-day shifts, I'm not certain you always want to be reacting to because that can cause more problems, more chaos in a system in terms of equalizing it for people. So what we want to do is to be able to look at those much larger, broader sorts of changes that maybe no one's even thinking about and then say, well, how would that help us to plan our organization better as we move forward?
So you've got a company, you're teaching at the Fluno Center, and you're busy writing books. We've
and
talked about two of them.
Talking about them, too. Publicizing the books. I mean, believe me.
Well, that
the
takes
business,
a long time.
The business is of writing a book is one piece of it, only one piece. The other piece is you have to let people know that it's out there.
Right, so the tours and speaking engagements.
Yeah.
So you're pretty busy, but our interest tonight is in the storytelling specifically and how we can bring storytelling into our businesses and make that profitable for all of us and fun. Talking tonight with Lori Silverman, our guest on air with In Business Magazine.
More on air with In Business Magazine with Jody and Joan is next on Madison 1670, The Pulse. With more on air with In Business Magazine, here's Jody and Joan on Madison 1670, The Pulse.
And we are on air with In Business Magazine tonight, telling stories. Tonight's all about storytelling and how to make it pay off for you or how to have fun in the workplace with it. Talking to Lori Silverman, I'm Jody Glenn Patrick from In Business Magazine, so you can well imagine that I love telling stories. Joan Gilman.
I'm Joan Gilman from the School of Business Executive Education Programs, and I teach with stories. And Lori's here to tell us what we should be taking away from the book that she just wrote, Wake Me Up When the Data Is Over, How Organizations Use Stories to Drive Results.
So how do they use stories to drive results?
Well, we looked at story use across different business functions: branding, strategy, marketing, financial management, project management, customer service, and so on. But there were really 5 uses of stories that stood out across all of those different examples. The first thing that leaders are doing is they're finding stories. And what I mean by that is they are assuming that stories just exist in the workplace and they're out there. So what they're doing is they're listening in a very different sort of way. You know, when we normally listen, we listen with judgment and evaluation, what a friend of mine would call story interrupt us, where we just stop people in the middle to get the sound bites. These people are listening, as Doug Lipman would say, delightedly to other people. They're using evoking statements, what we call story prompts, like Tell me about what just happened to you. Tell me about that difficult customer experience. Tell me about what happened in my week that I was off on vacation. They're getting stories from people. They're not interrupting them. They're listening to the whole and then using that information to help employees make decisions and take action about moving forward. The second thing that they're doing is they're taking bunches of stories, and this is happening a lot in the marketing arena. We call it digging into stories, but they're taking stories perhaps from focus groups or depth interviews, and they're looking across those stories for hidden patterns and themes. And they're coming up with some really cool information. In fact, to go back to your example from earlier with your friend, one of the things that Microsoft is doing is they're actually, once they dig into those stories and kind of find some common themes and characteristics about different market segments, they create characters. People. And they post those characters on the wall and they give them names and families and jobs and other things so that when they're talking about the data, they're not talking anonymously. They're actually talking about human beings who would have characters associated with them. The third thing that companies are doing is they're consciously selecting stories that they want to be heard and retold or put into print. Now, these stories might have to do with branding the organization. They might have to do with founding stories that are used with new hires or perhaps are even used in the interview process. But they're being very conscious and deliberate about the stories they want to be retold. Now, the challenge here is you certainly don't want to ignore what I would call the dark stories, the ones that you know whisper in the hallways and talk about in the bathroom that not a lot of people are supposed to know about, those need to be recognized as well, but perhaps not outside of the organization proper. The fourth thing that people are doing is what we talked a little bit about earlier, and that is that they're crafting stories so that they can use them in a variety of ways, whether it be in print, orally, in audio tapes, in knowledge management through videos, and so on. And then finally, there's something very interesting, and this is where the telling of stories falls into place. People are doing what I call embodying stories. Storytelling is one way of embodying it, but another way, let me give you an example at the Kimpton Hotel in San Francisco, the Hotel Monaco. If you walk into the lobby of the hotel, you're going to see a big tree that is in there. And if you look real closely, you're going to see a book in the tree that's upside down. And when you ask a staff member about why is the book in the tree and then why is it in the tree upside down, the story you get is about the founder who has dyslexia and how important it is to honor diversity in the workplace. And so in a way, that object gives life to a story. Now, what company knows this better than Coca-Cola? Because they can put up billboards anywhere in the world with just the outline of their bottle.
And we can all use stories in our businesses. It doesn't have to be a huge super brand. At In Business Magazine, we have staff meetings on Mondays, and we close with a good news story. And I'm just going to share one as an example because we were very excited with the last one. The owner of In Business Magazine, Bill Haight, was at a function, and Chancellor Wiley was there, and he walked up to him, and he said, you know, you should thank me. And Bill said, why? And there were other people present, so I can tell this because it wasn't said one-on-one. He said, well, I saw your advertisement in the magazine. I walked into Goodman's Jewelers, and I said, do you have In Business Magazine? And the manager said, well, I think so. And he found it, and he said, see that ad? I was going to buy something for my wife. I saw it. That's what I want. And Goodman was a relatively new client with us. And so the salesperson about fell off of her seat because these stories really encouraged everybody. Everybody felt good. You know, you left the room and you're excited and there's kind of this buzz. And there are stories like that in every company of a success, of something unexpected happening. And we just don't think to tell it. Or we tell one person. We don't tell everybody in the business. And we need to be telling everybody in the business.
You know, that's really true. When we put together the customer service chapter, that's one thing that came out, which is that customer service staff especially don't want to tell their good news stories. And when you ask them about it, they'll say, well, I was just doing my job.
Right. It seems like you shouldn't be out crowing about that because then it seems self-serving or whatever. But it isn't. It's part of the success. And we acknowledge our failures. Why are we not acknowledging our successes?
Absolutely. And to take that a step further from a business orientation, what you really want to be doing is taking what we call emerging information, like that example, and then tying it back to company practices and company ideology. So what we're doing is we're reinforcing the direction that the organization wants to move in long term. And in that way, then people know what sorts of behaviors are really helpful for moving forward. Now, there's the flip side of that, which is what we're learning in the project management arena, especially with NASA. They have a magazine called Ask, and they collect from project managers lessons learned stories. So sometimes they can be about successes. Sometimes they can be about failure. But what's really quite amazing about them, and NASA has done research on this over the years, is they actually talk about a story with a gentleman that we interviewed, Marty Davis, who wrote a story in one of the magazines, got a call from a woman in another part of the organization who asked him about it and said, I'd like to share it with my team. She reports back later. She saved $500,000 as a result of using the ideas in his story.
So it's sort of sharing best practices, but putting them in a way that you're really going to remember them. It's not just saying, this really worked good for this company. It's giving the actual example, or this didn't work so well, and you kind of sidestep it. But that story, I love story form. I love the format much more than I do a lecture. I want to hear somebody tell me a story.
Well, and you know, if you look at
people,
it feels
different.
Yes, as if you look at people's faces, they move into what I call story listening mode as soon as you start. In fact, I always tell people, if you're going to tell a story, don't say, I'm going to tell you a story before you even start. Just start talking and sharing. And you will find within 15 seconds that people will lean forward. They'll put down whatever they have in their hands, and they'll pay attention to what it is that you're saying. And it'll resonate at some level with them, especially if you've thought about what's the universal theme of the story and how well does it fit with the audience to whom I'm telling it. You know, so often we tell stories what I call in a happenstance manner, and then we find ourselves in awkward situations because we may have offended someone. I think the real challenge is in any situation that we think about what are the intended consequences and the unintended consequences of what that message says to people.
Joan uses a lot of stories, and by stories I mean examples, when you are talking about, you know, I don't know how you are in a classroom or in a presentation, but I know that in a group of people, if you're talking about business, you always have an example of whatever we're talking about.
Always.
And that is so cool because it really, first of all, it piques my interest more than just the statistic. If she can break it down to, well, Chico's does this with their branding, or this company does that with its branding. I love the examples. I mean, we've been so fortunate with all the guests that we have on this program that we're just collecting a zillion stories. You should talk to us someday, Missy. Have we got some stories for her, eh?
And they're all on tape, so they're all streamed and they're all archived at Madison1670.com. So
it's a business library.
It's a business library of great topics.
And we're going to continue talking about stories and finding out what are the key elements so that your story really has a lot of impact as you share it. Talking with Lori Silverman, author, educator, keynote speaker, motivator, and company owner, and our guest tonight on Air with In Business Magazine.
More on Air with In Business Magazine with Jody and Joan is next on Madison 1670, The Pulse. Now back to On Air with In Business Magazine on Madison 1670, The Pulse.
We are on air with In Business Magazine tonight talking to quite a storyteller, Lori Silverman. I'm Jody Glenpatrick.
I'm Joan Gilman.
And Joan, tell us why she's a storyteller.
Well, she's a trainer. She has used stories for all the trainings that I've experienced with Lori and sat in on. I think, how did it come about that you got so into stories?
You've got a background in training. Psychology and training. Is that all part of it?
Well, actually, what happened was back in 1999, I decided that I wanted to be a keynote speaker. I had a book that had come out earlier that year and decided that speaking at concurrent sessions at conferences and not being paid was no longer where I wanted to be. So I got invited to keynote at an 1,100-person conference. I was living in Spokane, Washington. This was in Seattle. And the night before I was to give my talk, I was going through it with a friend of mine. I was his guest at his home with he and his wife. And he looked at me and he said, "You're not using any visuals." I said, "Oh, no, Bill. I threw out thousands and thousands of overhead slides. Isn't that cool?" And he said, "Yeah, that's cool, except you don't have any stories. How are you going to keep their attention for 90 minutes tomorrow morning?" And I looked at him and I said, "Oh, I guess I forgot that I need something to replace them." So we stayed up all night long crafting stories between the two of us that I used the next day in order to capture the audience's attention. And then soon afterwards, I joined the National Speakers Association and had the pleasure of hearing a delightful opening keynote that was on the use of stories. And that's when it started to dawn on me that the use of story wasn't so much an art as it was a science, and that we needed to be very purposeful in the way we structured them, in the way we told them, and the way we followed up with them, at least in presentations. What we're doing in the current book, Wake Me Up When the Data Is Over, goes far beyond that, I think, with people, to use them in lots of other ways.
And now you're bringing them into the workplace, and we're talking about how stories can relate to passing on culture and expectations and standards. And that all relates to the bottom line. So that's really what we're talking about today on Air with In Business Magazine with author, educator, and trainer Lori Silverman.
More on Air with In Business Magazine with Jody and Joan on Madison 1670. The Pulse is next. Now back to On Air with In Business Magazine on Madison 1670. The Pulse.
We are on Air with In Business Magazine tonight telling stories with the master of the story, telling exercise, Lori Silverman. And Lori has written a book on telling stories, trainers telling stories. And now we're looking at how you're bringing that into the business world in a very serious and right on Story Way.
And I want a story, Jody. I want to find out from Lori Silverman how having a book released on Amazon.com on October 16th got to where it is today. How did you do such miraculous things?
Well, what we did in the course of literally 24 hours was take an unknown book and put it at number 59 out of millions on Amazon, and it stayed in the top 100 for over 2 weeks. It's already in its second printing. We're on to an audiobook, so I'm feeling really jazzed, I guess, about the whole situation, given the number of copies we sold in the first few weeks that it's been available. A couple of things, I think, for people who are looking at crafting books. First of all, so many people put all of their money into the project after the fact by hiring publicists. I did that with my last book. And what I realized is you really need to shift where you put those dollars and put them in up front. So I hired a fabulous woman by the name of Sam Horn, who's written a new book called Pop, who helped us to find a title for the book. And there's a whole story behind that, too. And what she said was, if you watch people who walk into bookstores, they do what she calls the sideways shuffle. They cock their head to the side, and they shuffle sideways, and they look at the titles on the spines of the book, and then they go, oh, this one looks interesting. Then they pull the book out, and then they might look at the book jacket for a minute or two. And your challenge as an author is to get someone to stop as soon as they hear the title, to be able to do something. And so what I did once we had that information in place is I decided that I would do an internet campaign, and I contacted people.
Everyone she knew.
Everyone, yes.
I was one of them.
Actually, I contacted lots of people I didn't know. I was very bold. What I've learned in life is that people who are the most successful are the most receptive to helping. And so I contacted major bloggers, people who have major e-newsletters, 50,000 subscribers, and others.
And how did you find those, Lori? As you were doing it. I mean, you say you contacted them, but how did you know where they were?
Well, I knew where some of them were because of information that I receive on a regular basis through email or bloggers that I follow or websites that I follow. And then I contacted people and I said, who do you know? Who do you think can help me? Here's what I'd like to do. Who would be interested in playing along with us? And I didn't get a lot because normally to get to where we were on Amazon, you would need about a million names. Mm-hmm. We did it with 80,000. We sent out 80,000 emails across the world with a consistent message, and the message had to do with double-digit growth, double-digit reduction in turnover, and significant increases in employee engagement. And from those results, people started buying the book. And then they told their friends, and that's how we were able to really use the internet technology to move us forward.
It was viral marketing. I mean, it really was. It was getting out there and have, you know, if I wrote to you and said, you know, Lori Silverman's written this book I think you should look at, whether they buy it or not, they're more likely to look at it because somebody they know recommended it.
Absolutely.
And I think that.
Or to recognize the name on the new author's local table, whatever.
Exactly. And we were playing off of what John was saying. We were playing off of people's credibility, their likability with the folks that they were writing to, and also that it was being promoted by people who they followed on a regular basis and thought to be folks who knew the trends of what was happening and were willing to move forward. Now, we didn't just do it blindly. Those people knew about the book, so they had a galley of it and could look at it and, right, and knew that it was okay. The interesting thing for me was there was only one person who said no, and that was due to time constraints. So what I've come to realize is that we really need to move outside of ourselves and to use, as Joan said, viral marketing more frequently in the work that we do. I think that's the new way of moving forward with book marketing.
And I tell all my students, you never get anything unless you ask for it. And if you hadn't asked, it wouldn't have occurred to me to do it. So I think you really have to get out there and push yourself when you wouldn't normally ask to ask for help.
Absolutely. But, you know, we had something else going for us. 36% of the 72 examples in the book show double-digit growth, improved financial performance. And for some organizations like Kimpton Hotels, they're talking about doubling again in less than 5 years because
of
the story.
And they're attributing that to storytelling?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I think one of the things that we did that no one's thought about doing is we asked people for every example they gave us, what results are you getting? Give me tangible, hard information. Because so many executives think of this as fluff. And I didn't think it was. I thought there was something really hardcore behind it. And so now we really have the numbers for people to take back to business leaders and say this stuff works. And you know what? It costs you nothing to implement it in your organization. Isn't that something?
And how do you implement it, Lori? How are companies doing it? I mean, you're talking about an owner who collected a lot of stories and then, you know, he left voicemail. How are other companies telling the story?
Well, there's a couple different ways. We talk to people who are story pioneers. And there are three different ways that they're bringing story into organizations. First of all, they bring it in at the level of tactic. So it may just be that they use it in their own work. They start to tell stories. They start to collect them from other people. They listen to stories delightedly when others share them. The second level that people are doing is through special projects. So perhaps there's a new initiative or a conference that's coming up or a branding campaign, or even more so, what's really working today is anniversaries, milestone events in organizations, to be saying, what are all the stories that would help people to understand what we've gone through in our history in order to come to this particular point in time. So they're using those initiatives. The third thing they're doing, and this is where I think we really need to be spending our time, is they're seeing story as strategy. Not a lot of organizations are there yet, but they're just like quality was years ago, an add-on tool or technique. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where story is today. People are using it as a tool or technique, but then there are those few organizations who are saying strategically, it's what we need to be doing throughout our organization. So they're doing assessments to understand how to bring it into every work process in the organization. They're understanding what it means on a bigger picture level in terms of their business strategies and how they do their branding and positioning in the marketplace.
And inside companies, stories are being told all the time. There are company myths that new people are told by people who have been there for a while. If they say, what's this person like? You know, what's the best thing about working here? Whatever, whatever. There are stories being told. And so to introduce some and have some common language stories that then are top of mind awareness when a new employee says, oh, what is it like around here? And they go, oh, and they're going to tell a story that they've heard the owner tell, or that they've heard a manager tell, and that they've heard a coworker tell at a table. You know, you're not just drawing a blank and you have to stop and think. You've got a repertoire. So you want to get your culture rich with stories to tell.
Absolutely. And one of the ways that happened is at Rush Copley Medical Center, they did something really cool in their OR area. One of the nurses was learning about story through her BSN program. And so she started to talk in story language. When people would ask her a question, she'd respond with a story. And then she started to encourage the staff around her to ask stories of patients instead of just asking for sound bites of information or data, medical history. And then in their staff meetings, they started to evoke stories from each other. Tell us about why you came into nursing. Tell us about why you stay in the organization. And then they took it a step further and they said, how about if we told each other stories about our patients? You know what happened? Turnover in the OR went from 35% down to less than 5%. They've now taken those stories. They put them into annual booklets that they put out on coffee tables for other people to read when they come into the organization. How magnificent. Because as you said, those stories are resident in people, and mm-hmm. it's just bringing them out and then linking them back to the organization and its culture.
And people feel valued if you're listening to their story.
Absolutely. They feel valued, they feel acknowledged, and they begin to be more engaged within the organization.
Well, this has been an engaging story. We're running out of time, but I really want to thank Lori Silverman for being our guest. And if you missed or you're driving, we don't want you to obviously to be writing down the name of her book while you're driving. We want to be able to send you to Madison1670.com. And from there, you can do one of two things. You can listen to this story again. Within 24 hours of air date, we have
which show up on the air,
right?
Up on the podcast.
We're on the podcast. And also you can then get her contact information by selecting On Air Within Business, which will take you into In Business Magazine. Thank you so much for coming with us, Lori, and for sharing your story tonight.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yep. Good night, Joan.
Good night, Jody.
This has been another edition of On Air with In Business Magazine with Jody and Joan on The Pulse.